This is Today in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Where are you talking to us from today?
I'm in South Florida, Jim, and thanks for inviting me on. Always a pleasure.
Rick, the stock market, what's holding it up? So many people keep saying this AI high-tech thing can't last for as long as it has, and yet it keeps growing.
Well, the market is entirely a creature of institutional investment. Do you know any institutions that are selling? So that's helping keep the market up. There are no sellers, and only the crazy short sellers. And of course, they not only keep the market up, they keep it flying through prior peaks and resistances. So that's how it works.
Are people buying the dips, or is it institutions buying the dips?
Well, yeah, the dip buyers are still there. Well, I think that we are either in a bear market, very close to it, and that's notwithstanding the fact that the S&Ps have gone to record highs, the trading in record territory right now. Psychologically speaking, we're in the phase where the market could take one huge hit and it wouldn't make a difference. You know, the Dow could come down a couple thousand points, 3,000, whatever. And the financial advisors would still have pretty good standing there. They would say, hey, look, have I ever steered you wrong when I said, just hold on to these stocks, they'll come back? So we haven't even gotten to that stage yet, but it will be applicable when we see the market take some sort of monster hit. The word will go out, just sit tight, everything will be fine. And it will be. And markets will rally again, but they're not going to get up to quite the levels where they're not going to get to new highs. And then they'll come down really hard again, and the advisors will say, well, you know, I haven't steered you wrong, but maybe if you're crazy and you feel like lighten it up a little bit on the next rally, and the next rally won't get anybody to where they want it quite to get. And the market in that sense is actually a mind reader. And I mean that literally, because the ups and downs really reflect the consensus and volition of all the investors, all the buyers and sellers. So it's literally doing the bidding of all those nut jobs. And because they're all playing a game where they're trying to second, third, and fourth guess each other, the market knows what they're thinking. It knows what the herd is thinking. So when I say that it knows exactly how much of a rally all these people are praying for so that they can lighten up on their portfolios, I mean that quite literally. So the process of a bear market is rallying not quite to the point where everybody wanted it to go. And when the downdrafts get even more intense, then the psychology shifts somewhat so that people are saying, hey, you know, I could lighten up a little bit, I'd take some profits. They're now saying, I need a pretty good rally, and please, Lord, just, I don't even want to make money here. I just want to get out of some stocks. And their desperation increases with each of these up-down cycles till eventually, a few years out in a bear market, you hit a low where everybody's given up, and they it's a washout. They all bail out of their stocks, and of course, there are no sellers left. But there are very few people buying with blood running in the streets, as the old saying goes. So the market skitters along a bottom, which in this case, given the size of the bubble we've had, the bottom could take 30 or 40 years to pan out.
The Dow, as we speak, is down. It's been marching along pretty well. Are people tired of investing in basics?
Oh, I don't know. I guess the Dow, I used to watch the Dow myself until it seemed to be unimportant for, you know, 20 or 30 years. I'm not sure who tracks the Dow. And it's useful to track it, I guess, when it's making new highs. But, you know, we're coming just off an all-time high in the Dow of 54,000 and change, and we're not even down 1,000 points from the high, I don't think. So we're down about 1,000, which is no big deal. We could fall 3,000 more and not even take out the last low, which occurred just on the 24th of July, down around 51,500 or so. So the Dow is just in a very, very normal correction. There are no broad trends being represented in this little sell-off. I'd say if you're looking for the Dow to bottom out and you want to bottom fish, 52997, let's call it 53,000 is where I would do it. Currently 53,680. So it's just got a little ways to go before it's going to hit a tradable bottom.
Mm-hmm. Now, the high tech stocks, are they going to continue to soar?
Who knows? Yeah, well, no, I say that facetiously. Of course they're going to soar because that's what all the chimpanzees own. You know, that's when they throw other people's money at a relative handful of stocks. How many of them are there? So, yeah, they'll continue to soar. And I would make the point that it doesn't take any money to cause them to soar. All you need is a 30 or 40-point gap opening like Micron had the other day, and you're creating whatever it is, $150 billion of quote-unquote wealth effect. So what happens is that you can have these swings within pretty wide bands, but there's no money involved there. You know, when Micron closes one day and the guys looking at the order books see they've got a flood of sellers on the opening, they take the stock down so low that the sellers are depleted. They take it down to a level where there are no sellers left or wanting to sell. And then, you know, when the news hits that the Donald is opening up the Strait of Hormuz before the crude comes down, $1.86, and the chimpanzees only have one response. They're kind of tracking oil tick for tick here. So you have a short squeeze going the other way. And these stocks open on a gap, and, you know, a 20, 30-point gap in a $1 or $2 trillion valuation company, that's big money. I mean, it's big wealth effect, but as I'm saying, there's no money that goes into that rally. It doesn't take hardly any money at all to foment a huge rally.
Gold, is it still something you should hold on to or start to sell off?
Yeah, it's been pretty good for the last few thousand years, so I don't see why there's a problem there. I mean, today, if you're holding, it's down about $56, but I think there's a suspicion that gold's bear market is over. You know, we came down from a high in the COMEX futures up around 50, well, not quite 5,200. That was back in January, and we hit a low. This would have been a few months ago, at just above 4,000. So that's a pretty good, that's officially a bear market. And all I can tell you is that the rebound, we're currently trading 4,413 on the COMEX December contract. It's going to 4,819. I am guaranteeing that in case there are no regulators listening. So it's got another $406 to rally. Keep that 4,819 number in mind, because there's going to be a little trouble up there. And if gold should pull back to 42.16, that would be about a little less than 200 points from here. Rent a truck, back it up, and load it up with as much gold as you can get at that price. That would trigger what I call a mechanical buy in the December contract. And again, we're using a target up there around 48.419. So that would be, if you held on to one contract for the whole ride, you'd make a quick $60,000.
Silver, is it going to keep going down?
When was it going down? No, silver's in the same, it's in the same bear market is over bounce, or no, I'm not going to say that, because neither bounce will take either vehicle, gold or silver, to new record highs. So I can't say the bear market is over, but this is more than a little bit of an upward correction, at least. And in the case of silver, the COMEX September is trading currently 64.67. It's going 19 points higher, almost 19 points higher, to 83.43. And gold has somewhat outperformed silver so far in this rally. And I can't give you a good number, like if silver pulls back the way I said gold could, and give you a great buy. There's no comparable opportunity in silver. But I would say silver is a green light to $69.21 versus the September. And it's currently $64.72. So we've got a $4 and some cent move. Silver's worth $5,000 per dollar. And so $50 a point. So it's a good thing to own here, at least up till 69.21.
Is copper the new gold?
It never was. Let me just see where we stand in copper. You know, we speak of copper as being prescient as far as predicting the course of the economy. And that's almost like saying, you know, the transports are a good indicator for economic activity. The nature of the activity changes. And globally, we no longer sell, we no longer make stuff, we just shuffle paper. But amazingly, the transports still kind of hang on as indicating something about what the economy is doing, even if it's only everybody, Americans are taking their, Wall Street Journal used the figure $110 trillion with a straight face, but that's what they say the baby boomers are using to fly and cruise to different places now. So somehow, even though the very nature of the global and U.S. economies keeps changing, the transports keep having their significance, although we never know quite what it is. It gets written about a lot, but, you know, I just make the assumption that everybody writes about it is wrong. So transports are well off the highs, up around 1291 was the top. Actually, the actual top was 1255 back in June, and we came down pretty hard there to a low of 737. So that was a pretty crushing sell-off. And let me give you a good number here for the You know what? I'm looking at a chart of Micron. That's a quirk of my TradeStation platform. All right, so transports. I mean, I'm sorry. You were talking about transports.
Yes, we did.
All right. Well, I can't give you a read on that because I don't even have the transports on my radar.
Mm-hmm. We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, you have some concerns about the upcoming midterm elections in the U.S.
Yeah, I think Trump's going to lose, and it's hard to believe because he's done so many good things domestically. He's got a lot of great ideas there, but the economic ones are never going to be there, happen in time to save this country from its political descent into who knows what kind of abyss. But the commentators are all misreading it as some sort of political movement. It's attracting larger and larger groups of people, but it's really, you know, when you watch Fox News, for instance, spends about 98% of its time talking about how crazy all these socialists are and how the fact that they're getting elected here and there, that they talk of it as though these people were getting elected, that it's anomalous, but it's not really. It's just part of a groundswell, and a swell comes not from people, voters who are attracted to the idiotic things that the socialists say, but rather to the fact that their own lives are so pathetic. You know, you can't graduate college now and even contemplate a job. What are you going to do? What are you going to do for a living? 3 years ago, I would have said, you better learn how to code or you'll be digging ditches. But the coders are, you can't find a job in that line now. And we've already seen AI, sort of AI is right there. It's not just wiping out all the coder jobs and drudge work for entry-level lawyers fresh out of law school. There are no jobs for them, virtually no jobs, but that threat has sort of crept all the way up to jobs that pay $1,500 an hour, like reading, well, they probably make more than that, but reading CAT scans, for one. You know, we're discovering that AI can read these x-rays scans better than humans. So there you could say that there are a lot of, these are high paying jobs that people are going to be out of work. So there's no area you can think of in the white collar sector where AI can't do it better. You could, as we talked about before, you could take a AI black box and put it in the middle of a courtroom and it could argue any case using case law, and it's encyclopedic knowledge of the law library. It's all locked into its pointed little head, and it can do the job, you know, better than any lawyer. So anyway, it's everywhere, and the disaffected people who can't even find jobs are going to be voting socialist, with the idea that things look so bad that perhaps if we elect people who trip the system into some god-awful mess to throw us into a depression, maybe even if that doesn't leave me better off, it'll leave everybody else worse off, and then we'll all be equal again. So I think that's the appeal of socialism, is it's kind of an envy vote. And the idea is screw all the people or the 20% that are just making money hand over fist. And if the whole system collapses, I won't be any worse off because I've got nothing anyway.
Yeah, so you could see very fast that people in the lower 50% are pretty well going to want to eat the rich because there's nothing else.
Yeah, and see, in New York, the idiots that the pundits on television, on Bloomberg and those places, they'll talk about the Mamdani grocery store, all right? And they'll talk about it, oh, it's so stupid, and, you know, you can't run a store like that. And they're missing the whole point of it, which is Mamdani is simply using, it's a test run for the business model. Can we literally, brazenly confiscate from the rich and put some of that money into distributing free or underpriced groceries? So it's not that everybody's kind of looking at it like a grocery store operation, but it's not. It's just it's redistributing food instead of welfare, food stamps, whatever, social, transfer payments. So it's sort of disguised as a grocery store, but don't mistake the intention there. Because it's really just it's a test run, and Mamdani, sure, a lot of the rich are fleeing New York in droves now, but and they're all coming to Florida because Florida is still business friendly and it's even friendly toward billionaires, but even that's going to stop, or it's going to be the you can see where some of these billionaires, they'll buy up a few $10 or $20 million houses along the Florida coastline, and they'll build a compound for themselves. And a few too many of these compounds, and the billionaires are not going to get such a fair shakedown in Florida. So they can run, but they can't hide. And we'll reach the point where there's nowhere they're safe in the U.S. at some level or to some degree. All the states, maybe Florida will be the last, Florida and Texas will be the last to fall in line, but they're all going to be brazenly confiscating from the rich to redistribute to the poor. I say the poor, but it's a much bigger group than that. It's everybody who thinks of himself as a have-not.
Is socialized medicine on the way in the U.S.?
Much worse, really. We could only have, and this I'm not even making a prediction. This is just a fact. We're going to have triage medicine way before the baby boomers have time to collect all the goodies that they're owed in medical care and services. And the simple reason is, you've had cancer surgery, you get a scan every 3 months. That's $13,000. And you multiply that times enough baby boomers and ask yourself, can Gen X, Y, and Z, and let's throw in the millennials too, can they afford to pay for the baby boomers' health care and Social Security? And the answer is a huge no. And so there's no way that medical services can continue the way they're going with the baby boomers just starting to edge into the years where they're going to be using those services intensively.
Mm-hmm. So what happens once this socialist wave hits the U.S.?
Well, be Canada. You know, you'll have to wait longer to see a specialist. They're not going to automatically sign off on your quadruple bypass or your new set of knees or hips or shoulders, whatever you're looking for. So there's just going to be a lot less of that.
In Canada, you get the surgery. It's just you have to wait a long time for it if it's not urgent. If it's an urgent matter, it happens right away because your life is on the line. But if it's a hip or knee replacement, you can wait years and years.
Yeah, and why do you think they wait years and years?
They're hoping you die.
That's exactly right. And that will become more and more the trend in the U.S. You know, the lead time, mm-hmm. even getting in to see a physician who's going to tell you, well, Jim, you know, it looks like with this diabetes, we're going to have to hack off your right leg. But if they wait long enough, you'll be dead. So it's coming. And it's not always as obvious as it would seem if you just talk about it. But that's what we're on our way toward.
Well, Canada's life expectancy is still 4 years longer than it is in the U.S., so maybe you'll catch up to us that way.
Well, to what would you attribute that?
Lack of murder and government health care.
That's great. That doesn't say much for the U.S., really, that you're sort of leading us, because we got so many, we still have drive-by shootings and you know, everybody in Detroit's got a Glock 43. They're all sort of plinking each other, and I guess that does affect your mortality rates. But better that way than in Russia, where the chief source of lower longevity is vodka.
Yes, well, life's too short to drink cheap wine. Maybe they have the same philosophy about vodka. No, they're just so miserable. It's the only thing they have to look forward to.
I wonder about that, you know, when I see, I have dinner a lot with a friend. He loves vodka with cranberry juice and a little bit of lime or yeah. lemon seltzer water. But I'm thinking, you know, would you mix a really good vodka with anything else, or is Smirnoff's good enough?
Yeah, Smirnoff's is good enough. If you're going to mix it, you don't need to use a premium brand, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, Stoli got, I guess, part of his popularity from the fact that people swore that when you drank it, it didn't burn. And of course, however much you drink of it, better yet, it doesn't smell. So I know. Well,
vodka, because it... what gives you a hangover, for example, is the integers, the sugar products in your alcohol. So rum's going to give you a hangover, and red wine dehydrates you. That gives you a hangover. Vodka doesn't have the sugar products in it that other alcoholic products do. So if you're trying to avoid hangovers, it might be a bit better, but just don't overdo it, because alcohol, period, you are, drinking yeast pee.
That's interesting. I can confirm that, from my college days, I can say the worst thing in the world to get drunk on is Ripple. There's plenty of sugar in there, and even worse than getting drunk on it is drunk and driving. I went to UVA, and we were an all men's school when I began there in '67, and we used to have to go down the road every night to do our dating. And the closest school was Mary Baldwin, 38 miles. Sweetbriar was 56 miles. And if you did a little too much drinking, the 56 mile drive back was really hazardous. And a lot of UVA guys died on the road. I lost some classmates.
Well, Americans are drinking less, and U.S. Alcohol makers are also in trouble because of Canada's boycott of American alcohol due to the trade war. And Canada just happened to be your biggest export market.
Yeah, and the Gen Zers, maybe Wires, they're an embarrassment, because the only thing they'll drink is like peach flavored beer or whatever. And the companies, the alcoholic beverage companies, are tripping over themselves to put flavors in things. I think I saw flavored, was it Jack Daniels, some sort of ad the other day?
Kool-Aid flavored Jack Daniels.
Right.
Well, they can't get the kids to smoke, so now the U.S. is allowing flavorings in vapes. I mean, what grown person wants to have bubble gum or root beer flavored cigarettes? But the kids do.
they do, and there's nothing so the liquor, just the distributors, distillers, they're all shameless. They'll provide whatever flavor you want in your single malt scotch. We'll put it there, God.
Oh, there. Oh, Lottie. Oh, putting anything there in your scotch. Oh.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?
Rick, always fun chatting with you.
It certainly has been, Jim. Always a pleasure to connect to your vast audience. And you always ask me where they can get Rick's picks. And same answer, rickackerman.com. Just go up to the top there, click free trial. You don't even have to leave a credit card number. You can come right in the chat room. And I'm going to tell you, without exaggerating, it's the best chat room in the world. We've got there are more tradable ideas in there. And no official profit and loss record. I don't even want people like that as subscribers who ask the question like, how profitable are your recommendations, because they're looking to be spoon-fed. But if you want the real deal, sign up, free subscription, and come in the chat room, say hello.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. You're listening to Today in Money. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Questions for the show can be sent to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening. Comments made on Today in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Today in Money is a production of House Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer, Tom Allen.